Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. Tonight's author on tour is Les Claypool, who reads from and discusses his debut novel, South of the Pump House, published by Akashic Books. In the weeks to come, we have Jerry Spence, Jim Lair, Nick Bantock, and many more. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. In a minute, it's time to begin.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, our time is precious this evening, so would you please welcome Les Claypool.
You people are insane. Hello, hello, hello. So anyway, I've done a few of these now, more than a few actually, and I've only done a couple on this tour, and of course I have my special edition that I've marked with little notes and whatnot, and I left it at home. So if I can borrow somebody's book, can I borrow your book? Oh. She beat you to the punch. Love is good. So I've been fighting this horrible thing that's been growing in my chest for about, well, since Washington, D.C. So how long has that been? Like 8 days? But what I'm leading to is that I might be a little raspy and whatnot. But what the hell? You know, I'm not known for the sultry nature of my voice. So yes, I'm Les Claypool. I told you to stay in the car, pal. I swiped that from Tom Waits, so. All right. Anyway. All right, class. Chapter 23. The big one. Ed had no idea how long his eyes remained closed. The backs of his eyelids were like a pair of monitor screens flashing a never-ending array of patterns and colors. The continuously shifting visual field within his head was Ed's favorite part about hallucinogens. He could marvel contentedly for what seemed like hours with his eyes closed. Donnie had ceased talking long enough for Ed's mind to let go a bit and lead him through some interesting mindscapes. The sound of voices interrupted his contentment and caused him to lift his eyelids once again. He stared blankly at his two fishing comrades as his eyes adjusted to the light. Earl was sitting, arms crossed, watching the pole tips like a diligent sentinel. Donnie had reclined back in his chair, holding a beer on top of his belly. Ed scanned the horizon. The sky was vivid with an orange tint. He watched the other boats off in the distance and could hear the sound of the water gently lapping against the side of the boat. Though he was impressed again by the vastness of this part of the bay, and intrigued by the smooth, mirror-like appearance of the water, Ed still preferred the psychedelic light show his brain was hosting in his head. Just as he began to shut his eyes, he heard the voices again, this time calling out in unison. "Ed! Oh, Ed!" the voices called. Ed's eyes shot open. He looked around the boat for the sound's origin. "Ed! Hey, Eddie boy!" the voices called again. The sound was clear but high in pitch. He followed it, scanning the floorboards around his feet. "Ed! Hey, Ed!" they called. "In here, Ed!" The sound seemed to be coming from the bait bucket. Bewildered, Ed peered in. "Hey, Eddie! There you go! Yeah, down here!" Ed smiled curiously at the sight of the shrimp calling up from him from the bottom of the bait bucket. "What's up, buddy boy?" yelled out a shrimp. "Yeah, Eddie, what's going on?" piped in another, followed by a chorus of greetings from the lot. "Howdy! Hey, hey! Ahoy there!" A grin beamed across Ed's face. He thought to himself, "What the hell's going on here?" "Not much," the shrimp responded in garbled unison. "You can hear my thoughts?" Ed wondered. "Of course, Ed," replied one of the shrimp. "What are you doing, Ed?" asked another. Just hanging out."
"No, Ed, what are you doing?"
I'm drinking a beer, kicking back, spending some time with my bro."
"No, Ed, he means what are you doing out here?"
Ed pondered the question before responding. "We're trying to catch a fish."
"Precisely," they answered in staggered chorus. "You're here for him, aren't you?" asked one of the shrimp.
Him, replied Ed, a bit perplexed. Yes, him, insisted another one of the shrimp, followed by yet another explaining ominously, the big one. We're always after the big one, Ed chuckled. But he's the biggest, yes, of them all, he is the biggest. And he is here, proclaimed one more. Ed laughed. You laugh! Ed stifled his laughter and tried his best to be serious. Sorry. He is here, another voice rang from the bucket. How do you know? Know what? Know that he's here, that he's the biggest, posed Ed. The shrimp responded. I feel him. We feel him. He is here. He is the biggest. The biggest, the entire bucket announced in unison. Ed smiled. Wow. Yes, wow. He is the one your father always dreamed of, said one shrimp. He's the one your brother would kill for, echoed another. And he is here, proclaimed yet another. He is here, he is here, he is here, he is here, chanted all the small shrimp voices in unison. Suddenly there was a loud shrill. It jolted Ed, and he looked around frantically for the source of this wretched noise. What the fuck? He asked out loud. Turn off your watch, dipshit, Donnie demanded, as he and Earl gazed at each other in amused confusion. Looking to his watch, Ed muttered, oh, wow. God damn, boy, what the hell did you smoke? Asked Donnie with a chuckle. I must have been spacing out, said Ed, reaching down to turn off his watch. Earl and Don looked at each other again, smiling and shaking their heads. Hey, Ed, you really think I'm such a dipshit? Asked Donnie as Ed reached in the cooler for another beer. Yes, Donnie, yes, I do. Because you think I'm a racist. Come on, you two, Earl pleaded. Can't we just catch a damn fish? That's what we've been trying to do, Earl, but we got the wrong bait and we're in the wrong spot. No, we're in the right spot, insisted Ed as he sat back in his chair. This is where the big one is. He slurped his beer and then added, the biggest. Earl beamed at Ed and patted him on the back. Right on, bro. Donnie stood up to reel in his line, commenting sarcastically, whew, Dougie, look at you guys. That's sweet as hell. A little brotherly bonding going on here. Man, I need me a tissue. I think I feel a tear or two getting ready to spring. Earl grabbed Ed from the back of the neck and patted him hard on the chest. That's right. Don't fuck around. This is my baby bro here. I got your back, bro, responded Ed, chuckling with his brother. Damn. That truly is sweet to see you boys a-hugging and a-fondling on each other like that. I'll turn my back if you guys want a French kiss or something. Donnie turned to check his bait. Ed and Earl continued laughing, clearly enjoying the moment. Seeing that his hooks were bare, Donnie reached into the bait bucket and scooped out a handful of grass shrimp, dropping them onto the engine cover. He grabbed one as they flipped about. Ed watched while Don threaded a shrimp on his hook, hearing a slight squeal. He looked at the other shrimp on the engine cover, focusing on a particularly large specimen. Hey, Ed, said the large shrimp. The voice was deeper than the others, with a hint of gravel in its tone. Hey, responded Ed. Looks like it's about my time. Donnie reached in, grabbed another shrimp right next to the one with whom Ed was conversing. You worried?
Nah, I've had a good life. We all gotta go sometime.
Yeah, I suppose so, reflected Ed. Both Ed and the large shrimp heard the squeal of the one that Donnie was currently skewering. Kind of a fucked up way to go, though, observed Ed. After a slow, deep laugh, the large shrimp pontificated.
Not many other ways for a guy like me. You know how that whole food chain thing is, your whole life always looking out over your shoulder for something to come and gobble you down?
Bummer, mused Ed. Don reached down and grabbed another shrimp.
Yeah, you know it's actually better this way. When we're all out in the big water, we'd be hanging out, a bunch of us schooled up. Then someone would holler and we'd scramble one way. Then a bit later, someone else would holler and we'd scramble another way. Shit, it was nerve-wracking as hell.
I'll bet, Ed chuckled.
You got it made, boy. Worst thing that could happen to you is you might get hit by a train or catch on fire or something. You might even get lucky and die in your bed when you're old. Guys like me don't get very old. Hell, look around. You see many fellas bigger than me here? Not likely.
You know, I could flip you overboard, set you free if you like.
Well, that's damn kind of you. Probably the kindest thing I've ever come across, and I thank you for that, I truly do.
The shrimp paused, then continued.
Nah, I'm tired. No more looking over the shoulder. It's my time. I'm good with that.
Donnie's fingers wrapped around the large shrimp's body.
Here I go, announced the large shrimp as he was lifted off the engine cover. Take care now, Ed.
Good luck, said Ed. He looked off at the horizon. The colors of the sky were amazing. He watched the water reflect the vivid imagery of the sky above. Then he heard a faint squeal, a bit deeper in tone than the previous ones. Ta-da! So, anywho, I have a show this evening in town. So, otherwise, I'd read the entire book to you, and we could hang out. We could order in some pizzas or something. But, so usually, what I do is I read a little bit, which I have done, and then I do a little Q&A, and which I always find very entertaining. Whether you folks do or not is, we'll see. But I would like to make a request that we try and limit the questions to questions about writing or about the book and not a bunch of questions about Primus or things related to bass playing and whatnot. So I might answer an Adrian Ballou question. You, sir. I think I'm more the peanut sauce man than the Renaissance man. Boredom. Inability to find contentment. I don't know. I think people ask me all the time, oh my God, you must be the busiest guy on the planet, and how do you ever sleep? And I sleep a lot. I think just because I've been at it for so long, I've accumulated quite a few things. And, you know, I have this stove, and the stove has gotten much bigger as time has gone by, and there are various pots on various burners on the stove. And every now and again, a project moves to the front burner. So the book being one of those things. I mean, the book started as a 60-page screenplay, 10 years ago. There's a film that's supposed to be coming out this next year that has been a long time in the making and blah, 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 blah. So time management it's all about time management. That's what I'm here to speak to you folks about, is how you can optimize your time. Yes, sir. I like to say that I don't profess to be a grand novelist or I'm a bass player that should have been an auto mechanic that has always been pretty decent at telling a story. And I have notebooks that are full of little stories, and they tend to become songs, as anybody who knows my stuff knows there's a lot of little tales. But this thing has actually kind of taken off, and we're on our fifth printing now, and the folks at Akashic have been really cool, Johnny Temple, and they're asking me to put together some more stuff, and I have some other long-form writings that are in various stages of completion on various burners on the stove. So at some point, one of them will reach the front burner, I would like to hope. You, sir, in the back. I have no idea. Actually, I'm lying. When I say I have no idea, I am not lying, because I don't write. I have written the set list already, which I normally wouldn't, but because today was such a runaround day, I wrote the set list before I came down here. And what did you ask me? Which songs? Neither one of those songs are on the set list this evening. So I would stay home if I were you. Yes. You who were so kind to loan me your... there's no real plans. I tend to, even if I start thinking in those terms, there tends, words like cocksucker and I tend to write what I think, and what I think a lot of times is pretty damn disgusting. Yes, you. The amazing people I've worked with. Well, the stuff I've been writing is fiction. So, but I think there's little slices of the author in just about everything you read. So it's all somewhat autobiographical in a way. Yes. Are you familiar with Akashic at all? Akashic Books? I wasn't. What had happened is, I had written this screenplay, and it started a 60-page screenplay. As we were trying to make the film, it developed over the years into a 120-some-odd-page screenplay. And then as people came onto the project and left the project, and money came in and went away, and trying to make a film is a very, very difficult thing. There was a lot of input. People had suggestions as to how things should change. And finally, we were working with this one producer who I won't mention, who's a big producer and someone who I very much respect. And we were all fired up, ready to go. Here, we're going to make this movie south of the Pump House. And then we all get an email saying, you know, I'm really excited about this project, but I can't really be involved if there are any drug references. So, you know, that's Moby Dick without the whale. That's Black Beauty without the horse. So it just kind of it made me say, you know, screw this. I'm going to write this thing into novel form. That way, and I might just put it out myself through the website or whatever, and that way at least the story exists somewhere in the way I perceive it and before it's convoluted by people like this fellow. And I'm giving you a long-winded answer. But anyway, so I started looking around for literary agents, and lo and behold, they kind of came out of the woodworks. I had three of the top literary agents were very excited to help me with this thing, and I went with who I thought was best. And they shopped it to all the majors, and very much like the record business, when you get involved with major publishing houses, just like major labels, there's a lot more input. And it's a business. It's a lot more calculated. They want what's the latest, you know, we want, you know, Devil Wears Prada Part 2 or whatever. You know, they want what the latest trend is. And along came Akashic, who they're sort of like the, you know, would you say they're like the sub-pop records of the indie book world. They've got a great reputation, really cool. Johnny Temple is really cool. And they let me be me. And it's a long-winded answer, but you, sir... That's a lot more work. I mean, it was sort of a cumulative process, you know. Over the years, it built into this thing. The process of publishing is a much slower process, from my perception, than the recording process, putting out an album or CD or whatever the hell we're putting out these days. So I think, just in general, you know, it's writing a book, just like when we were all kids. Hell, write a book. Oh my God, it's like climbing the mountain. It takes a lot of effort and time and sweat and blood. And yes. Story wise, I don't think there's really much influence other than just this was a story that I came up with. But stylistically, you know, I'm a fan of guys like, you know, Bukowski and Hunter S. Thompson and Gene Shepard and David Sedaris and Bill Bryson. And as far as the classic fellows, Steinbeck and Hemingway. So these guys. You know, this is definitely a dude book. I don't know how many of you folks have actually read this thing yet, but it's a very guy book. Yes, you, sir, with the fancy hat. You know, it was a thing that when I was a kid, my dad belonged to the San Pablo Sportsman's Club, which does not exist anymore. And I think there's a bunch of condos there now. But they used to have a thing once a year called Derby Day, where you go out and whoever caught the biggest fish won a prize. Well, my father caught a 100-pound sturgeon on 18-pound test, actually, but I said 20-pound test in the song because 18 didn't flow as well. And he won a pen, it wasn't an international, it was like a, I don't even know, Jigmaster or something, a big pen reel. But it was just one of those things. When I was a kid, I grew up in blue-collar land. I come from a long line of auto mechanics. And on the weekends, we were either working on my grandmother's rental properties, changing out a toilet or building a deck or something, or we were out in the bay chasing sturgeon and bass around. So that's what we did. So Derby Day was a big deal. Yes, you, sir. Yeah, the fishing shows. John Barrett asked me, I've done it twice now, asked me to do this fly fishing. It's Fly Fishing the World, where he takes celebrities out and to exotic places and they fly fish. And it's people like Liam Neeson and Dennis Miller, and I don't know how the hell they decided to bring me along, but I've gone a couple times now, and it's been amazing. It's incredible. You know, I always thought I had a pretty cool job, but those guys have an amazing job. They get in a plane, they go to some exotic resort somewhere, and they're treated like kings because, of course, all these resorts want their business featured on ESPN or Outdoor Life Network. So it's incredible. And you just fish, hang out at night and have a few cocktails. It's sweet, you know? So will I do it again if he asks me? Sure. I mean, I don't have plans to start my own show or anything. It's
not on the stove.
You, sir. I shall not marry you. I'm already married. But if I wasn't married and I was gay, sure. What the hell? That's assuming that this state advocates gay marriage. Will I ever write a biography? If I do something exciting, sure. I'll go climb a volcano or something, and then, yeah, it might be. I know way more interesting people than me. I would like to write biographies about some of my friends, because a lot of these people that you see pop up in these stories and in these songs and whatnot, they're half-assed based on some interesting people that I've stumbled across or that happen to be close to me. So I'd like to see some stories that I've heard via experiences of friends come to light at some point. I think it'd be great. You, sir, in the back.
Have you ever fished here in Colorado?
I have fished in Colorado. I think usually when I'm up in Boulder, somebody will take me out to one of those creeks and I'll go flick a fly around. You know, if I'm on the water, even if I'm not catching anything, I'm enjoying myself. I would say yes, luck. I don't remember so much the fish as the experience. You know what I mean? You, sir.
How much of the book is exact?
The screenplay is not published. There's really no point to that. It's like I said, it started as a 60-page, which is that's pretty short. And it eventually evolved. The main theme of the story is within those 60 pages, but it expanded quite a bit from there, and then from the screenplay to novel form, it's expanded quite a bit as well. So I don't think you're losing anything. In fact, it's probably the other way around. You're getting more information out of that, if that's what you want. It might just be fluff. I didn't say that. I think Donnie is not as... None of these three characters are specific to anyone. If anything, these three characters are supposed to represent... I grew up in semi-rural suburbia, a place called El Sobrante. I don't know if you know about it. And around that area, all around there, actually. And like I said, I come from a long line of auto mechanics, very blue collar. Where I went to high school, people walk around, go, "Are you going to take the test? You're going to take the test?" And that was the big ambition. Well, and you're asking, well, what test? Well, the test was the aptitude test to go and see what job you were going to get at Standard Oil, you know. And that's where I came from. And I think folks that grew up in that environment or in similar environments, they all know people like Donnie. They all know people like Earl. And there's always that guy like Ed that went off and found himself and came back. You know what I mean? So you've got your left and your right, and then your apathetic American right in the middle. Yes, sir. Would I do the book on tape? I don't know. I mean, I'll have to put it on the stove. It just depends on if I'm lazier than you. Yes. Well, you never get used to the critics. I've never been like a critical darling, or a critic's darling, I should say. And I made a point a long time ago of not reading reviews, because I can read, 20 good reviews and read one bad one, and I just feel like shit for a while. And not that I get 20 good reviews. So, of course, recently I'm flipping along and I read, a review on the book, and it's just like this horrible, who's this jackass writing, stick to playing the bass, So, and then I have to talk to my publisher, and he's like, no, and he sends me some good ones, makes me feel better. So, I don't, you never really get used to critics, but what the hell? Everybody has an opinion, and these guys get paid for airing their opinions, and that's good for them. They have a job, they're employed. Some I agree with, some I don't. It's just what you deal with. It's all part of putting it out there, whether it's you're unzipping your pants and showing your cock to the world or writing you know what I mean? You're exposing yourself, so you gotta take the salt with the pepper, or the good with the bad, or the yin with the yang, or whatever the hell you want to call it. You know what I mean? Yes. It's because I'm drunk. Primus question.
I had to ask.
Future for Primus in like a couple hours. I'm going to be jumping. I'll be jumping around down the street. There's always something. There's always something coming down the pike. It's just keep thinking of that stove, you know. And yes. Am I famous? Wow. Yeah, but see, I always get in trouble. My friends always get pissed off at me because I am the guy that's out there. You know, I said it recently. The thing that's exciting about this book for me and the notion that I'm on my fifth printing is, hey, wow, now I got something that I can potentially do after I blow my ears out and get my hand caught in a fan belt. Because, you know, my friends are always getting pissed at me for working on my own cars and going out and chopping up blackberry bushes with chainsaws. And so do I feel like I've missed out on anything? No, I live an incredible life. I'm happy as a clam, you know? I mean, I have nothing to complain about. You know, the most amazing thing, thank you very much. You know, the most amazing thing, and I don't know how many of you folks have kids, but you hear about it all your life, whether you're watching TV or reading, you know, it's all about the family. It's all about the family. My family's amazing, and that's the best thing. You know, all this other stuff it's just stuff to do when I don't get to hang out with my kids. You know what I mean? So, now I sound like an old guy. All right.
Just a question and comment. Comment being thanks for...
Well, that's very, very kind of you. Do I have a favorite muscle car? Well, you know, I was always a big fan of, like, you know, I like Hemi Cudas, but I always liked the Hemi Challengers and whatnot. But I never had one. I had a GT500 convertible for a while, and I sold it because it was cool, but it was like this incredibly valuable thing, and I was afraid to drive it anywhere, and I was worried somebody's gonna, because you get hit in that thing, and you can't get parts. You can't get any of that. You can get some aftermarket stuff, but you see, we're dorking out on. Got rid of that. Then I have a Sunbeam Tiger that's been all souped up. That used to be a race car, and the thing's incredible. And you know, it's British, and it's not quite a muscle car. It's 289 with 302 heads, but that thing's cool. It's like a slot car. So that's my favorite right now. But I'd love to have an old 58 letter series Chrysler, you know. That would be cool. Yes.
So do the
I would never break the law, so the likelihood that I would ever alter my perspective in any way other than, you know, natural, legal, holistic ways, I'll just leave it at that. And you can take it from there. I already talked to you once. Let me get somebody who I haven't talked to. Yes. If everybody's done, is there anybody who has a pressing? We'll do one more question. Did I listen to music while I was writing the book? No, I can't stand music. It's horrible stuff. It'll rot your head. Turn your brain into Swiss cheese. You, ma'am, back there, just to get one more female question. Yep, I've just been informed that there are no more of my books. There's plenty of other folks' books. So, there you go. Let's sign some Shinola.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks for Jerry Spence, Jim Lair, Nick Bantock, and many more as we podcast Authors on Tour. This podcast was originally recorded on November 21st, 2006.